FM Talk 106.5 and both your mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Yeah. A lot of folks on the text line at 343-0106. 343-0106. Yeah, we're talking about the protest in Alabama. Last night it was Huntsville, and a lot of discussion on that, about what happened, what the timeline was there. You've got reporters from AL.com getting in the tear gas. I would point out, in deference here, if you're going to be a reporter going into these situations where you've seen that tear gas has been used, take a mask with you. I mean, you know, don't go in there and get tear gassed and be surprised if you're in that situation. If you're going to be prepared, take a mask with you. All right, we'll talk about this. Our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to be here, Sean. How you doing today?
I'm okay. I want to kind of navigate the last 7 days of the protest going on, and okay, then what has been in a lot of cities has turned into anarchy, has turned into rioting and looting.
I was going to say, do you think it's as far as anarchy, or do you just think it's some criminals that are actually doing the looting?
The motivation for it, I think, is going to be different for different individuals. Okay. I don't know but the idea of, you know, like if you have coming in there, you loot, but you're also saying that, you know, defund the police, get rid of the police. I've asked this question. What happens if there's no police?
All right, Sean, we're all over the place. Let's stay focused for just a second.
You stay focused. Let's take it one at a time.
Then. Yeah, well, let's go back to this weekend, right, okay, and talk about the activities that happened on Sunday.
Let's talk about our home here.
Yes. So the first thing that I do is I want to make a distinction between a protest, a rally, and something that's criminal, looting, mm-hmm, right? So what we had on Sunday was we had two events that were rallies.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one in Mardi Gras Park. There was one at Cathedral Square, believe. Both of them organized, permitted. Folks came out. Folks were passionately expressing their opinions. But those were rallies, mm-hmm, right? And so even in the one that happened at Cathedral Park, Chief Batiste was there. Mm-hmm. There were law enforcement officers without any gear, just kind of walking around the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good, as well as the one at Cathedral Square. It was organized by a local professional. She did a fantastic job. No incidents whatsoever. So between the two events, the one at Mardi Gras Park actually ended up becoming a march.
Mm-hmm.
And the march was actually being escorted and guided by law enforcement. So you had the police cars on both the front end and the back end. They were going through blocking streets, sort of how they do with Mardi Gras, mm-hmm, periodically. Well, we saw the march come by because we happened to be parked by Bienville Square.
Okay.
And that's the point at which we left and actually went to the rally that was at Cathedral Square. Well, lo and behold, all of a sudden we hear, mm-hmm, about what actually happens at the on-ramp to the I-10 bridge. So you talked about tear gas,
mm-hmm,
right? And my question is, what is the set of circumstances that should lead to law enforcement deploying tear gas? Do you do it while it's still a protest, or does that protest now have to transition into something that ends up becoming more violent in nature?
Well, I think, you know, in talking to Chief Batiste earlier this week, he, mm-hmm, said that
you
was...
You got a chance to
talk
to him?
He was on for an hour with me this week, and Chief and I were talking. He said in that situation where somebody was going to go up and get on I-10,
mm-hmm,
you know, he said, we can't... He said, I could make the parameters here, like, mm-hmm, we're, like you said, escorting the march, doing all these things, but when it went to that point, I have to say no. You know, law enforcement has, mm-hmm, to say no. You can't go there. And we're not, he said, you know, the idea of law enforcement, he said, if we start retreating or coming back from lines, we give the wrong message, right? Mm-hmm. That next time, okay, we won't, you know, he said, this is it. We're going to stand here. You're not getting on the bridge or on the on-ramp onto I-10.
So I was going to say, rational minds can agree or disagree about whether or not the appropriate location for a protest is on the interstate, right? Because of issues of safety,
yeah, people,
for the people who are in the protest, as well as
you've ridden down I-10, right, before.
Absolutely, and you saw some of the footage, the absolutely horrible footage coming out of Minneapolis where somebody in a semi-truck was basically trying
people
to
got up on I-35 or whatever it was.
So I just want to, yeah, I want to acknowledge that before I go to my next state. But if
do you support people getting up on the interstate?
I don't think that's safe.
Okay.
I do not think that's safe, right? Okay. But I'm trying to illustrate a point here. So the police at that point in time were guiding the marchers, right? And they came up to a line of police, mm-hmm, officers, some which were in the traditional riot gear, as well as some that were mounted police.
Mm-hmm.
You mean to tell me that you cannot control a crowd that is peaceful and prevent them from going on the bridge
With the crowd was peaceful that comes up with a baseball bat and smacks out the window.
Baseball bat happened after the tear gas was deployed. Absolutely, that person was ultimately found and was arrested and should be prosecuted. But let's get the sequence right, right?
Okay,
so what is a set of circumstances that makes the deployment of tear gas?
I don't know. I'm not law enforcement. I mean, it would be. I said it this week that first time I can remember tear gas deployed twice in one day in our city.
Right. But now this is different than what happened on Airport Boulevard, which is part of the reason why I wanted to make the distinction. Right. Obviously, we were close, as I described, to the two events that happened there. We were not in the march that ended up becoming part of the tear gas deployment. But at the end of the day, in that particular incident, you had one tear gas deployment, and you had one person who busted the window who ultimately ended up getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a rally that ends up becoming a march concerns, I actually consider that a win. People were able to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement was protecting it as it went down. And when it got to a line that rational minds could disagree on, it all kind of went back. They ultimately ended up going back to the park where the rally ended up finishing.
Right.
And so that's where I'm saying from our perspective at trying to communicate with passion something that we believe in, that was a good thing. Now, when you start talking about some of the other stuff, like somebody trying to set a fire at Staples or someone, you know, breaking a whole bunch of windows, now you're involved in the distinction between what was happening during the daylight hours, what was happening at night, what is truly an expression of concern, and what starts to cross the line. And at that point, it's definitely appropriate for law enforcement to step in.
All right. So, and what about your reaction to, speaking of law enforcement, so like and Chief Batiste and Director Barber and Mayor Stimson coming in to talk, you know, with the crowd, you know, coming into Mardi Gras Park. And I thought that was, you know, I said it on Twitter over the weekend about Chief Batiste. I said, that's the example of leadership. He comes in there and talks, whether people want to, he gave somebody the answer they wanted or not. He came in and, don't say you don't have a conduit. Here's the chief of police talking to you face to face.
He was walking around the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, I had the opportunity to talk to him. I did not see the mayor during the time that I was there or the director of public safety.
But I do know that they were both there. Yeah.
So that's a rally, right? So the rallies were good. Again, nothing that I saw there that was problematic. Now let's talk a little bit about a protest.
Okay.
So what's been happening at...
Well, and define the difference between rally and protest.
Right. So, and again, this is my operational definition for the purposes of this conversation, but a rally is a bunch of people getting together in a place, appointed place, appointed time, appointed location, where there's clearly nothing else going on, but you're basically expressing your views about a situation.
Okay.
I usually make the distinction between a rally and a protest based upon the location of the event. So what happened at Little Bryant's store in 8 Mile, there's a protest going on because of a meme that was placed up on his Facebook page. So folks have gone to that location,
right,
and they are protesting and advocating for boycott.
By the location, it's a difference between a rally and a protest.
What happened at the Waffle House, Shakisha Clements incident, folks went out to the Waffle House, so
that's
direct
a
action at the location.
Okay.
For the purposes here, again,
okay. I want to work off the definition.
Right? Right. And so both of those things, protest and rally, perfectly appropriate. Right, operating within our constitutional First Amendment rights.
Right.
At a certain point, that can cross the line, and that's people setting fires, people looting, and that's
destroying stuff.
And that is the thing that law enforcement should be stepping in on.
Okay, so they, but this goes back to the tear gas deployment. The one you agree with at night, where you've got damage to structures, but the one you said rational minds can disagree is about getting on the interstate.
I'm challenging, and I'll use a couple of examples. So the people, two of the people who ended up getting interviewed were local professionals, two African American females, one an MBA from University of South Alabama, Dillard undergrad, another West Point grad, served in the United States military, master's degree. The third one was actually a white gentleman that I've known my whole life, who was down there with his two kids,
right?
Who was actually in the march,
right?
Professional, local, professional here in the Mobile area as well. And he's watching the whole thing in real time actually happen. That's the way that I found out the window being broken versus the tear gas deployment sequence. And so when you talk to people who are actually in it, there's a whole different impression of what happened at the rallies and the marches versus what was actually happening on Iron Pope Boulevard at night.
All right, let's do this. We'll come back, we'll pick this up and continue our discussion. Our guest, Robert Kennedy Jr., and I got a lot of texts coming in here as well. We'll get those when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. What's the show?
I think it's Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Mornings. I get confused. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along. Sean Dalton, our friend Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio, talking about protests, rallies, and what's beyond that. And you talked about the line where you and I seem to have a disagreement here, maybe, is on the line there on the ramp getting onto I-10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you talked about this in where the figurative line is where something changes from being a protest or a rally. You define those two into something else.
Yeah, and the clarification on the line is, I think where you and I have consensus is that a line exists.
There is some point, right? Where something goes from being a protest or a rally to being something else.
That is correct.
Riots, and then, looting, yeah.
And then the other area is what's the deployment tactic that ends up being used to enforce that line. And so this segues into what happened in Huntsville last night. I heard the reporting as I was driving in. I haven't had the opportunity to verify any of that myself just yet. Or probably a more national-based example is President Trump leaving the White House and going in front of the cathedral where he did the photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I like that as an example of this topic was the curfew went into place at 7 o'clock. And while he was in the Rose Garden talking, it may have been 6:30, 6:35, where the park police and whoever else was enforcing them started pushing the protesters from that area immediately outside of. And in the course of that, tear gas was deployed, rubber bullets were used, et cetera, et cetera. And so the question becomes, if the protest was peaceful and they're still operating in the parameters of the law, what's the responsibility of law enforcement to take preemptive action? And so I think that gets to this issue of where the line is.
Okay. So, and don't you got to...
Well, you know, they had the previous night there in Lafayette Square, and I do think that the reason they moved those protesters was main part to get the president over to the church for that picture that he took. But the night before, when the church was set on fire, and I think they said some other thing there in the park was set on fire, and that at that time when they began moving the protesters, the people were climbing on top of that structure. And then you have a couple different stories. You have the people that were in the crowd that said tear gas was used and rubber bullets, but then you had the park police come out and say, we didn't use tear gas, we used smoke canisters that didn't have the chemical in it. So, you know, differing stories, but do you think that the night before, with, like we talked about, crossing that line, when it appeared they did cross the line the night before, should that not carry any weight the following day? Is it a new protest the next day when the Attorney General and the President have those people removed from the park?
Well, you've got about three different things there. So, obviously, as you've gone through the process of the protest happening and you've had some violent acts occurring, each subsequent period, law enforcement was going to act differently, right? And you would expect anybody to modify tactics as they occur over time. But no matter how you slice it, until it actually happens, it's going to be hard-pressed when the whole idea behind the protest at the larger level is the relationship between the police and the community and this concept of over-policing. So if it hasn't happened yet, you're just going to be hard-pressed to justify across the board why it is you should take the action preemptively. Now, when we talk about just some heartbreaking things that happened, like, for example, there was a federal law enforcement officer in Oakland who got shot, you know, out there trying to, you know, basically do his job, then of course you're going to expect some people to come in and react differently in that situation. But the focus should actually be on the criminal element or the element that's embedded in the protests, not the people who are just trying to express their opinions.
You see the attack against law enforcement all over the country that's going on here. And to me, I don't know who's doing it, right? I mean, obviously we have individuals, the thought process behind it. But to me, that is an example. It's prejudicial. It's people attacking, you know, and we'll find out in the individual cases, but attacking somebody because they're in law enforcement. I talked to Chief Batiste about it and a couple other of my friends. What's it like standing there in the line you know, when you're facing a group and people are yelling at you and all this stuff, you know, what, I just was trying to find out personally what it's like. You look at the attacks are going on people that didn't kill George Floyd, didn't kill, you know what I'm saying? You're a police officer and I hate you. Yeah. We see that. And it's, that's the thing to me that seems like it's contrary to the whole idea of judging individuals by character.
Yeah.
These are individuals. They're also officers, but they're human beings.
I'm going to circle back to that here just in a second. And so as you're saying that, what's popping into my head was the long lines of folks who ended up having an interaction with law enforcement and lost their lives, right? And so we often talk about this as a singular incident. And I think what made this one so unique was most of the times when we're having this conversation, we're having it under the umbrella of a split-second decision where someone had to decide to fire or not fire. But in this situation, we looked at a video for 8.5 minutes as somebody's life was drained from them. And while he was being murdered, people were standing there watching, including other law enforcement who is supposed to protect him. And so while we're seeing all the stuff that's happening right now on video, in my community, there are all these things that happen where there was no video. And that's the thing that we're thinking about as well.
Do you think that...
Let me finish the statement, right, Sean. But that both of those thoughts pop into my mind as you're seeing it, as you were explaining the situation about standing on the line and feeling like there's a risk or you're being targeted.
Yeah.
So this is the moment where we simultaneously need to do two things. Just commit to rooting bad apples out of law enforcement. At the same time, we need to root out the people who go into protests and start acting inappropriately, whether it's something as simple as looting and breaking a window on one end, and absolutely positively the people who feel as though they need to pull the trigger. We need to find them. Somebody knows who they are. We need to hold them accountable.
Well said. Let's talk about what the, and I asked this question the other day, I just asked you personally, where's the end goal? Meaning, you know, you're talking about rooting out bad officers from, and I think that should be the goal no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you say, okay, is it a federal response? Is it making sure that every department and every, when do you say, okay, we've made a difference here? You know what I'm saying? Where's the finish line to this? What do you see from departments or federal response that you say, okay, this has made a change?
Well, I actually think, unfortunately, it's something that ends up happening generationally, right? And so you and I talked about this both on air and off air. The particular incidents that have happened over the last week or so, starting with the jogger in the Atlanta area, continuing on with the young lady who lost her life while she was sleeping in her bed because a warrant was executed on the wrong house, basically.
Right.
And then the incident more recently, is that all of us can look at that and basically be like, man, that wasn't right.
Great. Yeah.
And so what we have to do from a government standpoint and a societal standpoint is two things simultaneously. First, we need to equip, train, and lead police officers in a way that creates an environment that's safe for all of them. And then we need to hold them and leadership accountable when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So it's us supporting as well as holding.
Can you say that that's not going on across the country? I mean, there are individual situations you named, but you look at the cases you said, and you're talking about this goes on. These individual situations are horrible, and you get the officers out there, and hopefully ex-officers and prosecuted in that. But does that mean that you judge the MPD that way, or the Tucson Police Department, wherever?
Well, see, here's where we differ philosophically. So you're describing it as a series of individual incidents. I'm describing it as an underlying system that allows individual incidences to occur. And so I was having a conversation with one of the police chiefs here just yesterday, and we were talking about accountability in these situations, you know, the two that we had here, Lawrence Hawkins and Pritchard, Michael Moffitt in Mobile. And what I told him was, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes all people want to hear is, you know what, we messed up. Mm-hmm. And it's just that simple, right? Because every mistake that ends up with somebody losing their life isn't malicious. But when you don't get that sense that there's been some sort of accountability taken, then all of a sudden they all string together and it becomes that system that somebody looking at my chair may view differently than somebody sitting in your chair.
All right. Well, we'll have to pick this conversation back up next week. I don't think we're going to be post this discussion by next week, so I think we'll still be having it.
No, I don't think it'll be solved in next week, right?
All right. We appreciate your time. Appreciate you being here.
All right. You guys have a good week, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Robert Kennedy Jr., our guest, coming right back with your calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Rob Holbert from Landyap joins us as well. All straight ahead right here on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.
Eight 36 FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to the Nappy-nominated Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, morning. So we talk trucks all the time, and you guys have some hot trucks out there on the lot. But let's switch it up this morning and talk some SUVs.
Well, man, you know what we love, Dalton, is that we've got eight different SUVs, and I like to have choices. You know, when you go to a restaurant, you want choices, and with our SUVs, we've got everything from the big Yukon all the way down to the little Buick Encore, and right now, we've got 0% for 72 months, and really, the greatest part about the dealership is, compared to most of our competitors, we just have more options, more in stock, and people can go to our website, check them out. But the GMC Terrain, the Acadia, Yukon, everything we've got, man, including the Buick Encore and Vision, all that stuff is on the special sale right now, and people just need to check the website out, McConnellAutomotive.com, and, you know, we got the best prices, but the 0% makes payments easy, and anybody out there looking for an SUV or driving one you don't love, we hope they give us a shot, man, and upgrade.
Yeah, it's certainly a great deal. We appreciate it, Mitch.
Man, y'all have a great day, buddy.
All right, you too. That's Mitch McConnell. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, y'all say hello to Rob Holbert with Landyap, LandyapMobile.com, and extra busy now with the Nappy voting starting. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? I'm going to have to tell y'all you need to watch what you're saying, because I've got my stepdaughter, Vivi, sitting right next to me here today monitoring us.
You're the one that needs monitoring.
Yeah, I know. I told her she can't hear what y'all are saying.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's really you, Holbert, that the worry comes in. So
I know.
Let's just say what it is. All right. So obviously a lot to talk about here since we've talked last time, and the rallies and the protest, and then the unrest on Sunday in Mobile. That is what we just talked about with Robert Kennedy Jr., and we've been talking about all week. I talked about with the police chief as well. First of all, your sense of it here in Mobile, and then maybe we can compare it to elsewhere.
Well, I mean, I think we're fortunate in Mobile that the people who organized the protest did a great job of keeping things under control and keeping it focused on protesting. And I mean, I'm a fan of the protest. I'm a fan of us using our rights as citizens to get out there and protest. I mean, I tell you what, if there's another lockdown again, I'll probably be out there with everybody.
Right.
But you know, it's I'm a fan of that. I'm not a fan of looting. And if somebody can explain to me why stealing a TV set honors somebody's life or helps justice, I would like to hear that one. But you know, so I'm glad we didn't have a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm sure there were some, you know, there were some efforts by some people who I don't think had any intention really or any thoughts about actually protesting or any thoughts about George Floyd. I think they just to cause trouble. But those were quelled. And I think overall, our government officials did a really good job. I think Chief Batiste did an outstanding job the other day, standing out there talking to people. The mayor got a little over his head. It's kind of tough to when you get out there and have 100 people yelling at you, but he certainly should have been briefed on the latest issue that we had with the chokehold issue a couple months ago. That was tough for him, but overall, I think he did a great job as well. And we kept, you know, this thing focused on the right subject.
What about, I mean, I was talking about this with Robert earlier. Do you feel that police departments are getting judged by what happens by other police departments? You know, and okay, so the protest is for change, but change where? I mean, change in Minneapolis, change in Brunswick, Georgia, change in Mobile? I mean, they're not the same thing.
No, they're not. And, you know, I guess I'm a guy who at one point in life covered two different police departments, and they were two completely different animals.
Explain that. People may, because that may be, you know, people hadn't thought about that. But there you go. You're a journalist. You're covering police departments.
Yeah, every day I drove and I went, checked on the Pascagoula Police Department. And this was back in the day when you could actually see police records and look at things. And, you know, it was a very different time, but we could actually look at those things. And, you know, we'd go in and talk to the police in the Pascagoula Department, which was very professionally run. The guy, Mike Whitmore, who was the chief, was an ex-military guy, and the people he hired were, he did not tolerate, there were people who messed up for very long, and the guys he had were pretty straight arrow type of guys. The Goshen Police Department, my hometown, was a total disaster and a mess, and each shift, basically, whatever the captain would put up with was what the with that group of people acted like, and there were a lot of abusive behaviors, a lot of complaints, and so, you know, it was very different. And so, yeah, I think that a lot of that, you do go department to department, and you see things occur differently. That said, I will say nationwide, I think police have an issue with.
All right, and scene.
Looks like we'll have to get Rob back on the phone.
Yeah, see if we can do that. We can do that on the fly. We got the news break early. We can try it right here. So let's see here.
We'll try to dial him up.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'll read out some of these texts that we have here since we've been, you know, the things we've been talking about with Robert Kennedy Jr. and Rob Hulbert. And, you know, from our previous conversation with Robert, Chris and Sarah Land said, Mr. Kennedy is asking the police to do the impossible, to deal with a violent criminal element while remaining completely passive. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's exactly what Robert was saying, that police needed to be completely passive, but there is that question, you know, when is it too early to use force, and then what level of force do you use on these protests or in different situations? And
I think we can agree there's one level that's unacceptable on one end, and then doing nothing or pulling back law enforcement like you're seeing in some of these cities is unacceptable as well. I think we got Rob back on with us to talk more about that. Rob? I thought we did. Maybe we didn't. All right. I'll tell you what. We'll run the news break, come right back, see if we can get him on. Because I got a lot I want to talk about with Rob on this. And we'll get more of your texts and calls at 343-0. I'll tell you what. We'll clear a call. Let's do this before we go to the break. James is in Mobile. And James, what's up?
Hey, Sean. Dalton, how y'all doing? Y'all always give me that little short break in between, and you know how I am. I want to talk about something you mentioned yesterday, and then also about something that Kennedy was talking about. I love the man. I really wish I would have him on a routine basis.
We do every Thursday. Yeah. Every Thursday.
But you was talking about yesterday about the cats and dog thing. I want to let you know a cat might not be an average cat, might not be strong enough to pull you out of a house or a burning fire or a car or something. But I know for a fact my cats alert me whenever there's a predator or an individual. They're very good at doing that.
You've got guard cats? You're telling me you got guard cats, James?
I got cats that are not even afraid of fire.
Whoa.
When they were babies, I put a tiki lamp in the center of their food. Now, let's go to what y'all were talking about on the president.
Yeah.
I'm ex-military. Clint Eastwood made a movie about this. But if I was security for the president, a distraction would be any event that would take place outside of the White House where a terrorist could have an opportunity to drive a truck, shoot a missile, or shoulder held some sort of a rocket at the White House. Protocol would be not the president's choice. If I'm security, I'm saying, Mr. President, this is the way we need to do it. Let's go ahead and get the tanks and police out here. We'll get them to handle that while we increase our security or take you to the basement. It's just protocol. This is protocol. But the news media and everybody, to me, has blown this out of proportion. I would do this to protect my president, whether you be black, white, purple. It wouldn't matter. And once again, thank y'all for letting me get on the air.
No problem. I mean, there's a discussion of attack cats, guard cats.
How big are those cats?
By the way, kind of what James was talking about, the question about the Insurrection Act. Should President Trump invoke the Insurrection Act by bringing in U.S. military to quell protests in cities where riots have gotten out of control? I want you to vote online. That's the question in the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. We'll be right back. We're back, 850 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig, our buddy Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Let's quickly, talk nappies long and new issue quickly, or new issue long and nappies quickly, however.
Let me just say the nappies voting has begun, started yesterday at noon. I mean, I think we're up to already close to 500,000 votes. It's crazy.
What?
I mean, it
started at noon yesterday, so we're not even 24.
300,000. I apologize. 300,000.
So we're not 24 hours. We're not even 24.
It's gone nuts. Yes. I mean, I'm talking about each individual vote for a category, not 300,000 people voting.
Right.
300,000 votes each. You know, somebody voted for 50 things on there. That counts as 50 little votes.
Right.
But still.
That's still a bunch of people.
I think it's record-breaking right now. It is pent-up demand, maybe. I don't know.
So, tell them how they can go take part in that.
Yeah, you can go to votenappies.com and get on there and just pick your favorites. It's all the finalists.
All right.
So there's six finalists in every category. You guys are in some categories.
Yeah, but we're in, I'm going to keep this up. You know, we're stacked in. We're competing against ourselves in many categories.
Yeah, well, you're a victim of your own success.
Just trying to have a special, dispensation for us.
Hey,
but, you know,
Sullivan, you're in charge. Get rid of the other players. You know, get rid of the guys in your competition.
There we go.
You know,
we'd eliminate all other shows.
I'm tired of hearing this complaint every year. You can get rid of them.
Yeah, get ready for the leaks to start at FM Talk
106.5. Okay, a couple other things on the list here. The City of Mobile, you talked about a response of Chief Batiste. I thought was great. We also had our public safety director and our mayor down there. As we look at the politics of this, you see some of the rhetoric out there on both sides. I wonder if it's not specific to this issue, but we're not hearing people or seeing people posturing for politics to come, right? I mean, I see a kind of a proxy war going on a couple places.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with all this that is going to be involved in all the politics going forward, of course. One of the things I wanted to say before we got cut off earlier about, you know, the issues that we have, and I kind of alluded to it earlier. We can talk about different police departments and how professional they are. The one thing, though, I will say across the board is police departments uniformly across this country dole out less information than they ever have, and that issue is a real problem, I think, especially when you start talking about things like body cam footage, things like that. You know, we were told, hey, body cam footage is going to increase transparency, and you can't have it. You know, they only give it out when it is something that really helps the cause, their particular cause, or in Mobile's case, Mobile just doesn't make it available at all. But that's something I think that could be, you know, I think groups that are protesting really ought to focus on.
Well, yeah, and I think it needs to be seen because in my conversation with Chief Batiste, you know, we were asking about are black folks targeted more in this neighborhood or that? He said, I get the stats. He said, I get the stats for, like, we were talking about tickets or pulling people over. He said,
right.
I get the stats for each officer and who they pulled over and the demographics of the person they pulled over. You know,
right.
He said it comes across his desk. You know, so it's there. And he said, and I think that would be, you know, he talked about it and gave us kind of an idea about it, but maybe publishing that kind of information would help out there. Also, you know, one of the things that I hadn't figured out when to have this discussion, but as we look at it, when police are called, when we look at cases where black folks are pulled over by police, how many times are they, and I don't know, how many times are they pulled over just because they pulled him over. They said, oh, the taillight's out or whatever the thing is. And how many of those times is it because of a call for service? In other words, the somebody said, they describe, you know, somebody describes, okay, well, this happened, whatever. This person burglarized me or whatever, and they were a, you know, white male, black male, wearing white shirt, red shorts, you know, that you would get pulled over because you fit a description or something like that. And at that point, I don't think they're profiling. I think if they have a call about somebody and you meet that description, now you need to be able to overlay that with the call out that, okay, dispatch says they're looking for, and we described Dalton Orwig wearing a Final Four t-shirt, slick back hair, and some jeans, you know, driving. Yeah. I can't say what you drive, but driving a Ford. We'll say that. So, and then you pull that person over. You didn't profile them. You found somebody matching the description, right? So I wonder how many of those cases were the initial interaction between law enforcement and the person that was pulled over was because of a description.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all this stuff is much more complex than the just, you know, when we start hearing rhetoric, you know, people say, oh, you know, if you every time you go out the door, you're likely to die and things like that. Well, that, I mean, statistics don't bear that out. I mean, that's not, people are not just getting shot left and right in the United States by police officers. But, you know, I do have, you know, there are some people I respect and like very much who have told some stories over the past week that, you know, they are shocking.
Sure.
To talk about, you know, the way they're pulled over, the, what happens when they're pulled over. And that, again, to me, I think you go back to body cam footage, what's it supposed to be for. Those are instances where I think if somebody said, to you know, police department came, but maybe they've got an ombudsman, maybe they've got somebody come and say, hey, look, this policeman pulled me over for reasons that were completely racially based, and then made statements that were racially based while they pulled me over, and that should be able to be proven. You know, that should be something that you can look at. I would think that police departments, in light of all this stuff that's happened, they ought to start randomly looking at police at their body cam footage and just say, hey guys, let you know that, you know, we're going to be looking at least two stops of yours every month. You know, we're not going to tell you which, but just, you got to know that we're just going to randomly look at these things and try to correct problems before they happen. You know, it's that whole bad apples thing we keep hearing about, right? You know, and it is that way. I mean, a couple of bad actors of bad apples can really create a lot of trouble for an entire profession. I mean, I'm in that same kind of profession. You know, you are too. You know, you get a couple bad people that in our profession, they kind of smear the entire profession. And so I would think a lot of officers would prefer to see that those types of things, those types of people out of their business.
Yeah. You know, one of my worries there is a self-fulfilling prophecy too, because you have, this comes out, you get response against all police because of what happened with the bad apple. Then you have fewer people want to get into law enforcement. Can you imagine trying to get in law enforcement now? So they have a tougher time getting folks into law enforcement. Then they have to take maybe somebody who is not as cut out for the job as somebody else. Then you have another one of these incidents, and you have the, you know, then it snowball grows.
Well, I mean, I think going back to that example earlier that I was talking about, two different police departments, one department was better funded. One department hired people, encouraged them to get college degrees. One department hired, you know, it was lower paid, and they hired people who really were not cut out to be police officers. And there were many instances of, you know, violence and abuse because of people who shouldn't have been police officers. Okay. So yeah, it is. It's a very, very tough job. I never want to say, you know, that I don't. It's a tough job, and I wouldn't want to do it. It is a rough job. And so making it more difficult, making it worse, and making people, you know, why do they want to do it if it's just nothing but bad feelings and backlash all the time?
That's the problem. Rob, remind folks too, you got about 15 seconds here. Where do we pick up the new Lanyap?
You guys can pick us up all over town in our purple boxes. You can also check us out online at lanyapmobile.com. Join us, become a subscriber. It's 21 cents a day. It helps keep journalism alive in Mobile, Alabama. And so go to my.lanyapmobile.com. Sign up.
There he is, Rob Holbert. We appreciate it. Talk to you next week. All right, we'll be back at noon.